Blog Talk Radio.
Through early morning fog I see visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld for me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please. The game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway. The losing card I'll someday lay. So this is all I have to say.
Well, today's date is August 1st, 2011, here in beautiful Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones, and you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. I see some good friends in the room here, ACCO, Tesler, GGT's in the house, and I'm sure there'll be a few more a little bit later. I wanted to start off the show with some good news. We had the vote today on the debt ceiling, and the count was pretty good. The House of Representatives moved quickly today to pass the debt ceiling agreement between congressional leaders and Mr. Obama. The deal was approved by the House 269-2161. 53 votes more than needed for passage. That's a pretty good deal. The deal now moves to the Senate, which is set to vote on the deal tomorrow, 12 noon. We're not expecting any surprises there. So we should have this all behind us, which I believe is a really good feather in the cap of the Tea Party and the conservatives. The debt ceiling, raising of the debt ceiling is rather routine. It's something that usually happens without any great fanfare, and a lot of us don't even notice it's happening. There's like very little mention of it. And but the Tea Party that sprang up just after Obama was elected came to power pretty much and became a force in American political American politics. really, you know, we really threw our weight around. I consider myself to be a Tea Partier as well. And, you know, so now it's like the game has changed. Obama was expecting an easy debt ceiling raise so he could spend more money on a variety of his pet programs, and it just simply failed miserably. So now, in addition to raising the debt ceiling, we've got a lot of concessions, some really good cuts, not as much as we'd like, certainly, but this is the start of something big, I believe. Obama blinked. Democrats blinked. We've got something going on here. And like I said, for those of you out there who are conservatives who believe we got a pretty much of a raw deal here and that perhaps the Republicans blinked a bit, fear not. Usually, the debt ceiling raising garners very little attention in the world of politics. It's usually just business as usual. But this time, no, not at all. And I'm really very proud of the Tea Party and conservatives and the Speaker Boehner. This has all been very good. So we'll be back in just a moment, and then we'll talk more about this development, along with our petulant president, Barack Hussein Obama.
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, a true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet. Or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush and Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question, and Atlas shrugged, that the rest of us were asking 60 years later, which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
you decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. But you've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion.
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
A thief, no matter how well dressed, is still a thief. No doubt. No doubt about it. All right, so now this measure that has been passed by the House would raise the debt ceiling in several steps. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, by the way. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Now, the measure would raise the debt ceiling in several steps, lasting until 2013, and would reduce the federal deficit, the federal budget deficit, by $2.1 trillion over a 10-year period, which is inconsequential, really. It's not. We're up $14 trillion. One would suspect we'd be up to around $20 trillion in 10 years. So we're not really cutting very much. It sounds like a lot and it sounds like a big deal, but to my mind, it really isn't that big of a deal. The plan calls for a special joint committee that would be tasked with recommending where about $1.2 trillion of that deficit reduction should come from in spending cuts or revenue. And those recommendations would then have to be voted on by the full House and Senate under special rules if the Joint Committee of Congress fails to act. So we'll see how that goes, because there are a lot of folks who are very much concerned about that. ECCO put something up in the chat room, and I feel compelled to speak to it, to read it here. It's by LaRouche Webcast. I wonder if this has anything to do with the yes, Lyndon LaRouche delivered this webcast address from Northern Virginia on July 21, 2011. I am very familiar with Lyndon LaRouche. The guy is nutty as a fruitcake, but in a really interesting way. He had a gentleman whose name is Mark Fairchild working with him, and Mark was a very interesting man, and he had LaRouche is a strange guy. I mean, he was one of the first guys to use subliminal messages in his television. I don't know what to call those things, infomercials or whatever was happening back in 1986, 87, and 88 when he ran for president. Lyndon LaRouche is a nut of biblical proportions, but usually out of the mouths of a nut case is some really good stuff, and I'm seeing it right here today. And he goes on to write, Deborah Freeman says, I guess is interviewing him, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to today's webcast on behalf of LaRouche PAC. My name is Deborah Freeman, and I'm Mr. LaRouche's national spokeswoman." Yes, I'm very, very familiar with Deborah, okay? In the beginning of today's event, I'd think that it would be irresponsible not to take note of the fact that this is a sad day for the United States. At approximately 5:57 this morning, the space shuttle Atlantis landed at Cape Kennedy, and although it was safe, and in fact a perfect landing, that's something that we're grateful for. We're happy that the astronauts came back safely. It's also the case that the landing had really the nature of a funeral. Yes, because the space program is now kaput. Lyndon LaRouche is an economist, and he is. I will admit that LaRouche is a brilliant man, but he is. But on one side of the coin, he's a very brilliant man. On the other, he is as nutty as a fruitcake. I mean, I stood and talked to the man in 1986 in Chicago at the Marriott downtown, and it took all the brain power I could muster to follow what he was saying. I'm very familiar with Mr. LaRouche. I know he had this little feud going on with George Bush Sr. a while ago, especially when George mentioned that he didn't like broccoli. And LaRouche arranged a series of billboards throughout Virginia with broccoli on it, and stating that Bush should eat the damn broccoli. It was something that had a picture of LaRouche and a piece of broccoli, and broccoli, the billboard said, "Eat it, Georgia," something crazy like that. I love LaRouche. I really do. NASA is moving on to bigger and better things, deep space, while the private sector takes over orbital vehicles. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, bigger and better things, deep space. Okay. All right. GGT writes in the chat room that the space program is moving on to bigger and better things. No more fake moon landings in in the desert of Arizona or New Mexico. We're now going to deep space, somewhere out in the Mojave, I presume. No, that's just a joke. I mean, it's just a little bit of humor based on the shows that I was doing, late last week, the conspiracy theory shows. Economists can be a little crazy. ECCO. And boy, LaRouche is out there where the buses do not run. I'm telling you right now, he's out. You got to take a dirt road to get out to where LaRouche is. But like I said, I also believe that LaRouche is a brilliant, brilliant man. But so is Alan Keyes. Alan Keyes is a very smart man, but he's crazy as a loon as well. Now, earlier this week, we've had news media, people from MSNBC, CBS, ABC, labeling Tea Partiers. And all of the Republican Congress terrorists. And earlier today, we had the Vice President of the United States himself said, "We have negotiated with terrorists," according to a source in the room. "This small group of terrorists have made it impossible to spend any money." Oh, what a shame. It's impossible for the government to spend any money, like money we don't have. What is it that makes these ordinarily intelligent people think that it's okay to be so far in debt that you can just go ahead and spend more money? Why not dig the hole deeper, right? It's like when I was a very young man, I had a credit card. I got my first credit card, and boy, was I happy. It was a Visa. And on that Visa, I had a whopping $1,500 credit limit. Boy, I was beside myself. I went over to Montgomery Ward. I don't know how many of you remember Montgomery Ward. But I went over to Montgomery Ward store. And I bought not one, but two 40-inch Sony Vega TVs. Set them up side by side in my living room. I tell you what, those were the first 40-inch TVs. These were my first credit cards, because I had resisted getting any for a long time. And I bought some other stuff too. I bought some other stuff, and I tell you what, pretty soon, I was at $1,200. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and make the payment. I made a payment of like, I think it was like $30. But then I found some more stuff I wanted to buy. So I bought some more stuff. Next thing you know, I'm at my credit limit. And the bill comes due, and it's like, okay, $40 a month. Well, here's what I did. I went ahead. I'm going to tell you exactly what I did. I went ahead and wrote a check for $500 because I wanted to get $500 worth of stuff, more stuff. And I sent that check to the credit card company. Now, what usually happens, and it still happens to this very day, the credit card company credited my account $500. That meant that I had an extra $500 more to spend, even though it was only on paper, because the check was going to bounce. That's right, and I knew it was going to bounce. It was all planned that way. And so I had an extra $500 of free money. It was free. And I went out as soon as I saw that my check had been received, but not yet cashed. Well, the credit card company went ahead and credited my account in anticipation of that check clearing. That's right. I'm telling you like it is, because here we tell it like it is. We don't play around. And so I went out and bought $500 more stuff. Now, my bill is $2,000. Okay? And because the check doesn't clear. So now I not owe a penalty. I now owe an extra $30 to the credit card company for my check bouncing and to my bank for my check bouncing. And still, I figure, well, I'm in the hole now. I am deep in the hole. I may as well go all the way. And I sent another check to the credit card company for $500. Oh, yeah. And then the same thing happened. The next thing you know, I've got $500 more to spend, and I spent it. I went right out as soon as I saw the statement that said that my check had been received. I went out and spent and then the next thing you know, the credit card company catches on. They suspend my account. There's no more spending. I'm done. Now, either I pay off all this money, this extra money, because now my payback payment has gone up to $70 a month, not including the interest. So now it's either pay all this money back, preserve my credit, or just default and not pay at all. Well, I was running a little short on bread, and I considered just letting that card go. But then my raising, my upbringing finally kicked in after all this time, and I decided I was going to go ahead and pay that off and preserve my credit. Well, this is exactly what's happening with our country right now. People like Joe Biden, Barack Obama, they simply want to spend. It's not real money to them. It's not money that's coming out of their pockets. It's not money that they have to earn. It's other people's money. And so when Biden says we have negotiated with terrorists, this small group of terrorists have made it impossible to spend any money. And he says that they have acted like terrorists. Well, it's because they don't want to admit that that their spending is over, at least for now. At least for now. And it's really quite sad, but I dig it. I'm having a hard time speaking right now. We'll be right back in just a moment. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
He promised to change direction. $800 billion in stimulus. Trillions for government health care. 2 million jobs. Gone. Left turn after left turn. America's headed the wrong way fast. 6 million foreclosures, $14 trillion in debt, $500 billion in higher taxes, and the worst long-term unemployment in generations. Don't let Obama drive us to disaster. Change direction.
Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
He promised to change direction. $800 billion in stimulus. Trillions for government health care. 2 million jobs. Gone. Left turn after left turn. America's headed the wrong way fast. 6 million foreclosures, $14 trillion in debt, $500 billion in higher taxes, and the worst long-term unemployment in generations. Don't let Obama drive us to disaster. Change direction.
Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
This is Obama at his most sanctimonious, demagogic, self-righteous, and arrogant. And given the baseline, it wasn't a pretty sight.
We have now run out of time. I told Speaker Boehner, I told Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, I've told Harry Reid, and I've told Mitch McConnell, I want them here at 11 o'clock tomorrow. We have run out of time, and they are going to have to explain to me how it is that we are going to avoid default. Up until sometime early today when I couldn't get a phone call returned, my expectation was that Speaker Boehner was going to be willing to go to his caucus and ask them to do the tough thing but the right thing. I think it has proven difficult for Speaker Boehner to do that. I've been left at the altar now a couple of times.
I've now been in 57 states. I think one left to go.
So when you guys go out there and write your stories, this is not a situation where somehow this was the usual food fight between Democrats and Republicans. A lot of Democrats stepped up in ways that were not advantageous politically. So we've shown ourselves willing to do the tough stuff on an issue that Republicans ran on.
Oh, poor baby. Oh, he mad. Him upset. He really upset. Oh, he couldn't get a phone call returned because he's the President of the United States and he's supposed to have really cool phones. But there he found that when he became president, he had just a plain ordinary phone with a handle and a receiver. He thought he was Get Smart. He thought he was in a Maxwell Smart television show where he would have a shoe phone or something like that. And he couldn't get a phone call from Boehner because Boehner told him to go F himself, you know, in a really nice way. And he didn't feel like that was appropriate because, well, frankly, he's the President of the United States and he's supposed to have his butt kissed both cheeks. And apparently that was simply not going to happen. John Boehner, I applaud you. John Boehner cries, but he cries like a man does. Obama whines like a child. Remember when Christopher Buckley, whom I think is a great guy, endorsed Barack Obama? Remember that? The son of the late William F. Buckley, the founder of the National Review? Well, he wrote in October 2008, as for Senator Obama, he has exhibited throughout a, quote, first-class temperament, end quote. Well, now, nearly 19 months into Obama's presidency, there's scant evidence of that first-class temperament, which Buckley refers to as, you know, first class. If Obama's term in office thus far can be summed up with a single word, the word petulance would come to mind. Petulance. And this is, I'm reading from an article in the American Spectator called Obama's Petulant Presidency. The article goes on to state that Webster defines petulant as insolent or rude in speech or behavior, characterized by temporary or capricious ill humor. Well, that kind of fits me too, but I'm not the President of the United States, so let's not focus on me. And this fits Obama to a T. President Obama has been petulant towards those who disagree with him. Yes, he has. Petulant like the definition of petulance. When it came time to choose between the Iranian mullahs and the millions of Iranians marching on the streets, he chose the mullahs, stating, "It wasn't for us to meddle." And this would not be forgotten by the Iranian people. During the 30th anniversary of the Iranian Revolution, months following the elections, demonstrators could be heard chanting, "Obama, Obama, either you're with them or you're with us." Wow. President Obama has been petulant to dissidents. He would not meet with the Dalai Lama during his U.S. visit in October 2009, so as not to offend Chinese communists prior to his state visit to Beijing the following month. When the Tibetan spiritual leader did finally meet with Obama in last February, it was behind closed doors. The only glimpse the world got of the Dalai Lama was when he left the White House out of a side door just past a large pile of trash. Contrast this with the time the Dalai Lama met with President Bush in October 2007. On that occasion, Bush handed him the Congressional Gold Medal, because President Bush wasn't going to kowtow to the Chinese and whine and behave like a kiss ass. What about President Obama's petulance towards Israel? Build nuclear weapons in Tehran, and Obama, well, he's cool, detached, and behaves as if nothing's out of the ordinary. Nothing happened. It's all good. But build houses in Jerusalem, and Obama will unleash not only his sound and fury, but also the entire weight of the U.S. government right down on you. When Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wouldn't let Obama push him around in the White House over statements in East Jerusalem, Obama walked out on him like a little girl. President Obama has been petulant toward police officers sworn to protect us. Who among us can forget when the president chastised the sergeant, James Crowley, and the Cambridge Police Department for having, quote, acted stupidly, end quote, in the arrest of Harvard professor and good friend of mine, Henry Louis Gates, Jr. And he's a friend of Obama's. And I make sure to tell Gates every time I talk to that clown that Obama is a moron. And every single time Gates hangs up on me, I'm surprised he still takes my call, frankly. Yet, it isn't the only time he's cast aspersions against law enforcement. Last April, when commenting on Arizona's immigration law, which had passed days earlier, Obama said, "But now, suddenly, if you don't have your papers and you took your kids out to get ice cream, you're going to be harassed." End quote. Quote, end quote. I'm sorry, I didn't do the quote at the beginning. That President Obama would casually accuse law enforcement of planning to engage in wanton harassment speaks of a petulant disposition. Obama is seeking to divide us as a nation in so many different ways. It actually boggles the mind. Well, it doesn't, because that's who he is. President Obama has been petulant toward this country. What American president refers to his country while abroad as arrogant, derisive, and dismissive? What president does that? And now, President Obama has been petulant toward the families who lost loved ones during the attack on September 11, 2001. This time, he may have taken his petulance just a bit too far with his support for the construction of a Ground Zero mosque, which is still in play. Now, let me be clear. As a citizen and as president, I believe that Muslims have the same right to practice their religion as everyone else in this country. Well, Mr. Obama, no one's questioning whether or not Muslims have a right to practice their religion. Many Muslims practice their religion in their homes. No one's questioning that, but don't let that get in the way, Mr. Obama. And just because, oh my God, it's amazing. And he went on to say, and that includes the right to build a place of worship and a community center on private property in Lower Manhattan in accordance with local laws and ordinance. This is America. The guy has no shame. None, mind you. Americans have been clear in saying it isn't about religious freedom, but rather about propriety. Just because Muslims can build a mosque near the site of the deadliest terror attack in our nation's history doesn't mean they should. But instead of apologizing and admitting the error of his ways, Obama regrets or reverts to a petulant form and tells us, I was not commenting, and I will not comment on the wisdom of making the decision to put a mosque there. Wow, what a tough guy, what a man. What a man. He's such a leader. I was commenting very specifically on the right people have that dates back to our founding and exactly how many mosques are presently being proposed for construction on private property in Lower Manhattan. For Obama to suggest he wasn't giving his blessing to the Ground Zero Mosque is an insult to our intelligence, and that's all he does is insult our intelligence. He's now reached the pinnacle of petulance. I wonder if Christopher Buckley still thinks Obama has a first-class temperament. What does he have to say for Obama's petulant presidency? That was written by Aaron Goldstein. The petulant president. Barack Hussein Obama. The child president. The childish president. Who else thinks he's petulant? Because the petulance is coming up all over the place. Well, none other than... Yeah. You know who I'm talking about. Ken Langan, Wall Street honcho. He took issue with President Obama. He took him to the woodshed for acting unpresidential and petulant by pitting rich and poor Americans against one another during the bruising battle over the debt. He went on to say, and I quote, "He's not bringing us together. He's willfully dividing us. He's petulant," said Logan, a former director of the New York Stock Exchange and founder of Home Depot. Ronald Reagan would never go into the Oval Office without his jacket on. That's how much he revered the presidency, Langan said in a CNBC interview yesterday. Now, Langan got into a lot of trouble over that one. Well, a little bit of trouble over it, because Langan said that, folks were calling him the fashion police and saying that he shouldn't be worried about what the president wears in the Oval Office and all that. The thing is, it goes a little bit deeper than that. The president of the United States seems to not hold the presidency in much high regard, except only as it relates to him personally. Langan went on to say, this guy, Obama, worked like hell to be president. Behave like a president. Let me look at you as a model to how we should behave. What does he say? Fat cats, jet airplanes. What is the purpose? Us versus them? Obama has made higher taxes on wealthy Americans, oil companies, and corporate jet owners a constant refrain in his speeches to the nation during heated negotiations to raise the nation's debt, which is at this point $14.3 trillion. People, although Langan bristles at Obama's fat cat attacks, he said he doesn't oppose higher taxes on wealthy Americans or even means testing Social Security benefits if the money is used to pay down the crushing federal debt. People like me have to understand, he said, that it isn't business as usual. I should not get Social Security. I think it's a travesty for a man of my success and of my means to get anything from the federal government. I think I should pay more taxes. But everything they take from me should go to reduce the debt. Langan also warned against continually raising the debt. Now let's touch on that for a moment. Just for a moment. Do you think that Obama would actually tax fat cats, corporate jet owners, and fat cats in order to use those, that windfall to pay down the debt? I don't think so, because Obama has stated that why should folks like Langan fly around in corporate jets when a mother is worried about how she's going to send her kid to college? Obama didn't state during that fateful interview, that question and answer session not so long ago, that, hey, why should corporate jet owners fly around in their fancy corporate jets instead of paying a little bit more in taxes so we can pay down our debt? He didn't say that. No. He didn't say anything like that. He wants to take Langa's money, my money, your money, and then he wants to take that money and give it to somebody else. The debt is not in his interest. He couldn't care less about the debt and where the money's going. That's what's important to him, where the money's going. That money's supposed to be going to somebody he believes should have the money more than you. That's what it's really all about. Let's take a little bit of listen to what Ken Langan had to say. This clip is 17 minutes and 29 seconds. We're not going to listen to all of that. Just a little bit. I mean, how hard is it for these guys to understand this? What is the real agenda here? Let's take a listen.
He is the chairman and CEO of InvaMed Associates. He's the co-founder of Home Depot and the former New York Stock Exchange board member. We want to get your thoughts on what's happening with the debt ceiling, first of all.
It'll be revised. It'll be taken care of. The debt ceiling is a done deal. They don't know it yet, and they're going through this grand theater down there. But we have to do it for obvious reasons. But if we don't take advantage of this inflection point to address the bigger issue, which is the baby you're about to have in September, that baby's grandchildren. That baby's grandchildren are what we're leaving behind. And that's, to me, what we need to address. And this is not party. This is not a political issue. This is not liberal versus conservative. This is the real world. Right. So many of these people in the subprime crisis got in trouble for one reason. People loaned them money they couldn't pay back. People paid their debts. None of this would have happened. We're heading in that direction. But there's a bigger issue to me. The debt ceiling will be raised, number one.
They'll come next week?
Yeah, by next week. They'll come to some juncture where they're going to say, well, this is not what I wanted, but it's the best I can get, both sides. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen, trust me. We need to understand as a nation that you can't forever expect somebody out there, whether it's China or whether it's somebody in England, to say, I will always take America's debt no matter what. We will reach a point, for example, right now interest rates are at historically low levels, and I would argue unrealistic levels. If you go to what would be a more realistic level,
4.5%?
Well, I'm talking about 2-year treasuries, 2.5%, 3%.
Okay.
you add, based on the current debt, you add $300 billion a year
of course.
To the interest bill of the United States of America. It's got to come from somewhere. We are heading into a dose of reality we've never seen before. One of them is, look at the number of states that are now laying people off, because you know what? They can't print paper. And their debt levels have already been downgraded in many cases.
Do you think then that what's on the table in Washington is not enough, meaning that this inflection point is not being used properly because the plan unto itself is not going to be big enough? And we've talked about this around this table, but ultimately we're kicking this can up slightly down the road towards the next election. Is that the right way to do this, or should we go for a bigger plan?
You remember the movie Moonstruck, when the old man gets in the kitchen and this guy left that girl and they're together, and he walks in and he listens to all this and he says, I'm confused. I don't know what the hell's on the table today, and I don't think most Americans do either. There's been so many iterations. There's been so many slicing and dicing. I know one thing. Make it. You know, the thing the American people respect more than anything else, keep it simple, stupid. Okay? This is not complicated economics. This is very simple household finance. You don't borrow more than you can pay, because if you can't pay it, you lose the car, you lose the house. Well, this is not highfalutin, all these measure risk, and all the American people understand one thing. When you borrow more than you can carry, you get in trouble. We are there. Now.
All right, I want to stop it right there. Just as I was giving an example earlier about my own finances early on, when I thought I could get something for virtually nothing. And this is what Langan is talking about. This is exactly what he's talking about. Any housewife, any responsible adult will understand that one shouldn't, that it isn't wise to spend more money than you're taking in, that at some point you're going to get into trouble. And here's what I think, folks. I think that Mr. Obama knows this. He's not a complete idiot. He simply doesn't care about the future. He doesn't care. He only cares about now. What's in it for him? What's the best way to get him reelected so that he could redistribute more of America's wealth and pretty much turn the United States into a socialist utopia? And the rest, he believes, will take care of itself. There are those who believe that Obama means well, that he has advisors who are ill-advising him. Even, you know, so many people believe that this guy means well for the United States, that he simply is in over his head, that he simply doesn't understand the basics of economics, that he's a neophyte who just doesn't have the skills. I believe all that's a bunch of crap. Here's what I believe. I believe that Obama is a reasonably intelligent man. Because really, all it takes is a reasonable amount of intelligence to come to the conclusion that if you continue to spend more than you're taking in, you're going to go bankrupt. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, and I have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on.
Hello?
Yellow.
Hello?
Oh, Maze, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Hey, girl, how you doing?
I'm doing marvelous.
All right, okay. Did you just say marvelous?
That's what I said.
Oh, okay, all right.
So I have a question.
Yeah?
When we talk about the debt and all of this stuff, What is the debt, and what are we supposed to, I mean, what causes, I mean, what debt are we trying to pay?
The $14 trillion that we've racked up over the, I'm not sure how many years that it's that we've racked up this massive amount of debt, but
well, why wasn't it paid before now? If that's the case,
well because it's $14 trillion, it's hard to get that
before it got
get
to
that down.
Trillion, I'm saying before it got to, are we paying a debt for like 2 months ago, 1 year ago, or is that the debt that you're talking about? Or are you talking about a debt 16 years ago, or what kind of debt are they talking about?
You know what, Mays? I do not know how long this debt is. I know that it's been piling up for the last 30 years.
Uh-huh.
But I do not know, you know, I believe that the last time that America was able to balance its books was back in the late 1800s.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was the last time they came even close to it or something?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. I do know that, but I don't know how long exactly. And that's a good question, and I'll get the answer, and I'll have it for you tomorrow. But
today,
I do not have the answer to that.
Yeah,
if anybody who's listening does have the answer, please call in at 347-884-8500. How long have we been racking up this massive debt? And I'd also like to have, Mays, a year-over-year figure of what the debt was, say, in 1925. 1935, 1945, you know, how it has expanded over time. Here's the thing. We're not going to be able to pay down this massive debt in the next 5 to 10 years.
You're not going to be able to pay it down in the next 30 years.
Perhaps not. But what we can do, Mays, is actually stop.
Are they paying on the interest of the debt, or are they trying to pay the interest on it, or are they trying to pay the debt? Which one is it? Because, you know, like if you purchase a house or you purchase a car or something, you pay more interest, I mean, before you can start paying on it, really, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, you're absolutely right.
What you got to pay interest on.
What we can do first, Mays, to stop the bleeding or help stop the bleeding.
Unless you're looking at your interest that you're paying to pay the interest plus whatever your mortgage is, then you're going to get somewhere. But if you're just paying the minimum of what it is, you're going to never get nowhere.
Well, that's true. But what we can do is balance our budgets. You know, the last president to balance the budget was Bill Clinton, and he did a great job of doing that.
Well, how did the budget get out of whack after that then? I mean, and now it's out of whack, and what happened?
Well, a massive amount of spending by the two wars that we've gotten in, Social Security expanding, Medicare expanding, a variety of programs that were put into place to benefit those less fortunate. All sorts of it's like a piece of a puzzle. It's not just one thing that's occurred.
Social Security. How can
for
Social
example,
Security
I'm going to explain it to you.
Okay.
Let me explain it to
I'll
you. Social Security was designed at first as a stopgap measure. It wasn't designed for long-term prospect. More in terms of a end-of-life thing to prevent really older people from dying on the street, from going broke.
Is it free?
It wasn't designed for people who are living much longer. Now than they did in the 1930s and 40s when the program came into play.
Well, everybody didn't get Social Security then because they were not getting paid for working. They were not even getting anything taken out of their check for working.
But the thing is, we're not taking in the revenues. We're not taking in revenues to cover the Social Security of those who are getting it. It's like, okay, people pay into the Social Security. You're paying into your Social Security benefits, Mays, when you work, right?
Yeah,
and
a lot of people pay into it.
Right.
Don't even
and
do
that money, and that money is being taken and used for other purposes. It's like when you put your money into a bank. But it's happening that way, Mays. It's happening just that way. It's just like, listen, Mays. Listen for a moment.
I'm listening.
Please. God save the queen. Listen, it's like when a bank, when you go and put your money in the bank,
you get nothing for it.
The bank takes your money and they loan it to somebody else.
Yes, but you don't get nothing.
Hoping that you don't come calling for that money the very next day. Now, when you do, they give you your money, but it's usually money that somebody else put in the bank to save as well. Pretty soon, if everybody goes to the bank at the same time to get all their money, the bank won't have everybody's money. Because
no,
it'll
not.
Be all over the... You saw It's a Wonderful Life.
But I'm asking you a question. Why don't the bank pay the people that keep their money in some interest? They don't give them anything. You get more interest from loaning
we're
talking
from
the bank.
I thought we were talking about Social Security.
That's what I'm saying. Well, Social Security is not a free...
All right.
Social Security is taken out of your check every time you get paid. So if people...
The GGT has written in the chat room, the United States has never missed an interest payment. GGT also writes, the cuts will apply to the principal, so long as we have a balanced budget. GGT also writes, at this rate, it will take 37 years to pay off the principal. GGT has answered the question for us. 37 years to pay off the principal.
So how many years did it take to get there?
But in order to pay off the principal, and GGT, correct me if I'm wrong, we'll also have to balance the budget each and every year, which means that we will have to not spend $1 more for the next 30 years than we take in. And indeed, we'd have to spend much less than we take in year over year for the next 37 years in order to pay down the principal.
So
it's basic economics.
Do you think that they
basic
should
home economics.
I'm asking you a question. Do you think they should put the Social Security money back where they took it from?
Well,
because
Social
Security Trust was nothing wrong with it. Nothing's wrong with it. And then money is not going into it because people are not working. If people are not working, that means you don't put anything in the coffers.
Maybe.
So the people that are retiring don't get Social Security anymore because they're not working anymore. So it should have been, as the country used to run, is like this group come in and work until they get a certain age. They draw their Social Security that they put into the system, and the next group come along and replace those, but nobody's being replaced anymore. That's part of the problem.
Well, that is part of the problem, Maze. And for the first time since you've been calling in this program, you've actually been right about something, and I do appreciate that.
I'm always right.
Obviously, you've taken your Jinkoba today, and you're in a pretty good mood, and you're loosened, and I do appreciate that.
Okay, you devil dog.
All right. All right. So here's the thing. America needs to simply do this. Balance our budgets just like that liberal president Bill Clinton was able to do. I hate to say this, but Bill Clinton was, for all his lying, for all of his being completely untrustworthy, he was able to balance the budget and he was a fairly good president. I would take Bill Clinton. No, he didn't. He had the Republican House, and thank you for pointing that out. Bill Clinton did not balance the budget by himself. He had the Republican House and Senate for the first 4 years of his presidency. And I tell you what, you're absolutely right, Mays. Here's the thing, Mays. You still there?
When the last time Congress went to work?
Went to work?
Yes, I'm still here. Yes. When was the last time Congress did the job that they were supposed to do?
Today.
Really?
That was the last time.
And how did that happen?
How did it happen? The Tea Party got involved. The Tea Party said, this is how it's going to be. We won't stand for this anymore. We're going to live within our means. We're going to pay down our debt. We're going to do the right thing for this country.
Really?
We're going to live within our means. No more of this spending, 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 and more spending. This is how it's going to be, and it's going to be that way from here on out. That's how. Mays,
what are they going to start spending on?
Listen to me, Mays.
I'm listening.
Did you hear the story I told earlier about my credit card issues?
Well, I don't have credit card issues because I don't own them.
No, I didn't ask you if you had credit card issues. I'm asking you if you heard me speak
about
my earlier issue with my credit card.
Mm-hmm. So what was wrong with you?
Years ago. I was trying to get something for nothing. I was young. I was 20, 21, 22 years old. I didn't know any better. I'm going too far, Maze. I did know better. I knew exactly what I was doing. And I did the wrong thing, and I almost ruined my credit. If my mama and daddy's upbringing didn't kick in at the very last minute, my credit would have been ruined for at least a few years. But I tell you what, I did exactly what this president is doing right now. I spent money I didn't have. Because
it was real money.
It wasn't paper.
Right. Excuse me, you got that right. He spent money that he don't have. With the money that he did have, he had to spend it on something that had nothing to do with him being there. He had to go backwards and pay a bill. It was just like you keep saying, I ask you, what is the debt? So if he got to have to spend money, you got to spend it on something to get something
well,
to lose,
you know what?
Or you got to spend it to leave it there.
Well, you know what? I talked to a liberal friend of mine about a couple of months ago, and I mentioned to her that Obama has spent more money in the last 2.5 years than all other previous presidents combined. And her response to me was just this, Mays. It takes money to make money.
It sure does.
I had to delete her from my iPhone.
Well,
she had to go at that point.
You want to.
She had to go.
Well, if I have to go, so be it.
No, you don't have to go because you haven't said anything really bizarre
so
like that.
What I'm saying, I'm not understanding if there's a debt when you came into the door. And that debt is still there when you get inside the door. What are you supposed to do? Be blamed for the debt?
All right, listen. Bobo King writes in the chat room, with Obama in the White House, if he gets reelected.
Bobo King has a problem, Obama, even if the debt.
Listen, let me finish my.
Problem.
You know what? Let me finish my thought, Mays. Please. With Obama in the White House, and if he gets reelected in 2012, and I hope he doesn't, it will take double that 37 years. You know what, Bobo? That's an interesting name you got there, but listen, Bobo.
His name sounds like what he is.
That's very funny, Mays. Look, I wouldn't. If Obama gets reelected president of the United States, it won't be as bad as you think. If we can take the Senate, if we can maintain the House and take the Senate, that clown gets reelected. He's pretty much done. He'll ride out that 4 years, and he'll be gone. I say that as long – I certainly don't want that clown to be reelected, Bobo. I'm going to tell you that right now, right here and right now. That it will be the worst nightmare for this country. The only saving grace we'll have, Bobo, is if the Republicans can take the Senate. Don't you agree, Mays?
No. If they take the Senate, it still won't be no different. They've had it before. What did they do? When they did have it, what did they do is what I'm asking you.
Well, here's what they did. They went along. I'm going to tell you what they did. They went along with George Bush, and they spent money we didn't have, like we're talking about right now. And
no.
Let me finish my thought.
Okay, go ahead.
We spent money we didn't have, racked up some serious debt, and you know what? The people said enough. You're done, brought in the Democrats. The Democrats did even worse, spending even more than the Republicans did, racking up massive amounts of debt, just like the Republicans did, and now they're gone. So what's happening? Let me finish, Mays. So now what's happening is the Republicans have learned their lesson. We're not spending any more jack we don't have. We're going to stay here. We're going to be here. We're going to protect the United States interests. We're going to protect the United States citizens. And we're not going to fall into the same trap that we did when George Bush was in office.
Mm-hmm. So when are they going to clean up the mess that was sent?
All right, hold on, Mays. Hold on,
that's
Mays.
That's the job they should be trying to do.
I know.
When they took part in it, they should be cleaning the mess up, too, trying to help clean up. Well, I see them having a fight against the American people.
I understand.
Both sides, Democrats
right.
and Republicans.
Okay.
I don't see no difference.
Hold on, Mays. We have another call on the line. Let's see, Robert Jones, Conservative Report. Hey, you're on with the Conservative Report.
Hey, Robert. This is Lee.
Hey, Lee. Is that you?
Yeah, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm great, man. What's going on?
Very good. Hey, I just a little bit of common sense, not for you because you already know this, but for everybody else, I want to say something to what May said. She says the typical liberal talking points, the same straw man arguments that, you know, Barack Obama inherited a debt. Some debt, and that's true. Every president in the United States that's come in office has inherited debt, every last single one of them. Now, we wouldn't be in the debt we are in now if Barack Obama, and they never want to talk about this, Robert, we wouldn't be in the debt we are now if Barack Obama would have done what he said he was going to do when he came in. He said he was going to end Afghanistan. He was going to end Iraq. He was going to close down Guantanamo, which would have saved us billions and billions of dollars over the past 2 years. We wouldn't be in the debt we are now. But that would just be a small portion. But I'm wondering what your caller thinks about that, how Barack Obama even has us in more debt, but even going into Libya and spending hundreds of millions of more debt.
Well, let's find out. Mays, what do you think about that?
What I think about that is that we don't have 60 votes. We don't, and all of the people screaming and hollering when he want to get out of Guantanamo Bay, and all of the, when he want to stop the war, and you see him screaming and hollering, the same Congress. That's what's wrong, the Congress. So now what did you have to say? That's why he hadn't did anything. They don't have 60 votes when they were Democrats. Now they still got the Senate, still don't have 60 votes. That's a crutch and a lie. Excuse those same.
All right, Mays would go on for another half hour if I let her continue. You want to respond, Lee?
She was talking so fast, sir, that I couldn't really hardly pick.
Well, let's get her back. Let's get her back.
She's talking too fast for me.
Okay, I'm gonna say it slow so you can hear it.
So I can hear it. I couldn't interpret it.
Okay, I want to interpret it this way. The Congress don't want to stop the war. They are invested in it. What else do you need to know?
Oh, no, I don't need to know anything. I'm sorry. I know nothing, but I will say.
Can't get 60 votes. So now do you get
both you know
sides,
what? You know what?
Both sides are intertwined with not stopping the war because they're getting money from it.
May, you're behaving in a very petulant fashion right now, and I don't appreciate it. You're taking a cue from the President of the United States, and you're behaving petulantly. Go ahead, Lee.
I agree with what she said. You know, we're all, you know, both Democrats and Republicans are invested in it. But the fact of the matter still remains, and I noticed that she didn't answer my question, or she didn't reply to the statement I made when I said Barack Obama came in, and he said he was going to put an end to the two wars we were in, those two wars that cost us hundreds of billions of dollars, number one. Since he's been in office the last 2 years, we're still spending, what, $10 billion a week. And that's money that Barack Obama said he was going to save but didn't save. And not only that, he took us into another war. Congress didn't say, okay, go to war. I mean, they didn't vote to defund it either. But Barack Obama came in saying that he was going to save the economy, and he didn't. He continues to spend billions in two wars he said he was against. So I'm confused with people that make excuses for him saying, oh, he inherited this. Well, he's continuing in it. He's continuing in it, Robert. He's not stopping any of it.
No doubt, Lee, and you know it's a personal pet peeve of mine for a grown man who's in charge to go ahead and blame, you know, his predecessor over and over and over again. Nearly three years into his presidency, he's still blaming his predecessor. It's quite embarrassing. Mays, what do you have to say to that? Because you're an apologist for the president.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for slow people to not understand that the war would have been over if it was left up to the president. But it's the Congress that want to keep it going. So how could he only vetoed or he passed. Congress is the one to do the rest of the work. So he wants it to stop. They scream, "Don't stop it!" So what do you do?
When did that occur, Mays? The President of the United States can pull troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan anytime he wants.
He can only pull the troops out that he sent in because there's a pact that Bush them signed that the rest of the troops will have to stay there until the contract is up.
What contract is that, Mays? Are you okay?
Has,
Mays,
oh,
come on. Come on.
I'm fine, Devil Dog. I am fine.
What contract is that, Mays?
2014. It's when they are supposed to leave Afghanistan. The president had nothing to do with it. Can't do nothing. Congress can do something about it, but
wow.
The president can't.
Wow,
okay.
He's the commander-in-chief. That's not true.
Yeah, that's not true. Mays is a wonderful woman. She's a wonder. I mean, she just.
Well, Robert, you're a military man. You're a military man. You know it both better than me and Mays does. I mean, he is the commander in chief of the armed forces of the United States of America, if he so wishes, whenever he feels like it. he can stop it immediately and bring them home tomorrow. I would disagree with that, but he could do. He's the commander-in-chief of our armed forces, right, Robert? I mean, I think that's
That's exactly right. He is the commander-in-chief, Mays. He can bring everybody home. No, Mays. Yes, he can.
It's just like when we were talking about the deficit thing. If he would have provoked the 14th Amendment, well, he can go to trial. That's breaking the law. He can't do this and he can't do that. But see, all those screaming to the sidelines, what he can't do and what he shouldn't do, and then you turn around and say, well, the president said he was going to do this when he was running for election. Look at the Congress and see what they have done since they've been up there. Take a look at the Senate. Harry Reid is one of them.
Mays.
And all them clowns up there working together with this old stuff.
Can I ask Mays if she cut George Bush the same slack that she's cutting Barack Obama
I don't cut him the same slack because you got Rumsfeld that went to Met
Cook. Robert's right. You're an apologist.
Let me explain. You can hear when you want to hear.
I can explain it for you. I know what time it is with you, May. I can read.
Whatever you want to call it that you're pulling out of your throat ain't gonna deal with me. And that's all it is.
May, listen. You are Barack Obama. You are Barack Obama apologist. You are a liberal.
You want to. I will take that. I'm not a liberal because I don't wear names.
Okay.
I don't even know what that is.
All right.
Like, okay. I'm trying to figure out what a conservative is, a radical conservative, or whatever kind of all them different kind of conservatives.
Hey,
I'm still wondering.
You have a liberal political ideology, so I mean you may not like the name tag, but as they say,
I don't have to wear it because you called me that, do I?
No, but that was, no. The word liberal describes your political ideology.
That
liberal
your
is
ideology,
ideology
of a liberal.
No,
it doesn't describe
no,
my. I'm an American. That's what I am.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, Mays is.
There's no talking sense.
No, she's interesting and she's all right, but she's making excuses just like most liberals do for this president and his. Outrageous, outlandish policies, and
you can
see right through it.
Yeah, if you're going to say, because if you're going to talk about the job of the President of the United States, a lot of people, and maybe Mays knows that, it's the office. It's not the presidency is the office, not the man. It's an institution, not a person. And if you're going to talk about the president, the institution of the President of the United States, and say, well, it's Congress, then you are going to have to, I mean, logically now, you're going to have to cut every other president the same kind of slack. You're going to have to. I mean, you can't do that. If it was the Congress with Barack Obama, it was the Congress with George Bush, too. They both held the same position. I mean, come on.
Well,
man.
Yeah, but you can't – that won't occur if, in fact, you are – you know, when you don't do that, you really do show your true colors and Mays's colors are Democrat.
She's blue through
Democrat,
and through.
Democrat blue. I bet she's wearing blue right now. Let's find out. Mays, what color are you wearing right now? Blue?
I have on. What color do I have
no,
on?
No. I don't want to know what you're wearing now.
I said, what color do I
just
have
what,
on?
Just
all
what,
white. That's what color
okay.
it is. I have
all right.
on all white. Now, what are you got to say?
No, that's okay.
That's a sign for, what is the white
color? You got a donkey symbol? on your white polo shirt?
What do you got a white flag?
She's probably got a donkey tattoo.
Yeah. Democrat and proud.
I don't associate with parties. I'm an American. I don't see
that. Who do you usually vote for? Did you vote for Barack Obama?
Yes, I did. I'm going to vote for him again.
Okay.
And I'm going to vote for him again. Yes, I am.
Okay, you voted.
And
you voted liberal. You're liberal.
Going to contribute to his campaign again, too. And what did you
okay.
vote
for? What has he done for you, though? Can I ask you that, Robert? What Barack Obama has done for
I am not looking for him to do anything for me. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I'm not looking for him to do nothing for me. Except run y'all crazy. That's the best thing he ever did, being president, is to run y'all crazy.
Oh,
so that's what he's doing for me, running y'all crazy. Is that good enough?
Mm.
So now the party that you with, what have they done for you?
But she wants us to suffer. So you want me and people like Robert and I, conservatives,
you
want us to go crazy. Well, I'm going to answer you. You want us to go crazy. See,
I asked you what has the party that you are in done for you?
The party that I'm in is done for me. I don't belong to any particular party. I'm actually an independent.
I don't either. Well, you're right, independent of what?
Let me ask you this question. Are you registered?
But they ain't not going, you're right. No, I'm not.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you? Never have been. Never will be.
Is it good enough for me? Well, it's your business, I guess. I mean,
so I don't let the media decide how I think. And I don't let people decide how I think. That's why I have a brain of my own.
Well, you have some great liberal talking points that I've heard on CNN before. So you are. She listens to the media, Robert. She's playing.
Yeah, she is. She is, and she's wonderful. But she can't disguise the fact that she's super liberal. I do too. I do too, and I love it when she calls in because, you know, she's. She attempts to play this role as a moderate, as an independent, when she really is a super.
I'm not an independent. I'm not a moderate. I'm not. I told you I'm an American.
I understand.
But what if you said you're going to vote for Barack Obama, May again?
I'm going to vote for him again, and I'm going to contribute.
Okay,
to his campaign.
Can I ask you? Oh, sure. I'm sure you will, and that's your right as an American, and I respect
that right.
Thank you.
I am an American, and that's why I do. I have the right to vote for who I want to. Thank you.
Amen to that. I agree with you, May. Let me ask you this question, though, May. You're going to vote for him again, obviously, and that's right.
I
respect that, and I respect that, though I disagree with that.
Are you
going to
vote for
right.
who you want to again, right?
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Am I complaining
right
about
American.
Who you voting for?
You probably will.
It's your American duty to vote for whoever you want to.
Oh, May, come on. Let me get a word.
And I'm glad you got the opportunity to have the right to vote.
I'm glad you did, too, May. May, how about this, though? What has Barack Obama done so far in his presidency? What has he done so far that's impressed you that makes you want to vote for him again? Understanding the debt we're in, understanding all that's been done by this president, him spending more money than any other president. He spent more money, May, in 2 years. He has spent more than any other president in 234 years. So what is it that Barack Obama has done, or you think he's done it so great to give him a second chance?
I said he's running y'all crazy, which is just like George Bush said. I'm going to repeat something George Bush said. Keep telling them the same thing over and over and over again, and they'll believe it, and they got you. Because that's all you repeat is what you heard somebody else tell you, and I get sick of hearing that line.
Oh, no. No, I don't repeat talking points.
I
asked your question.
That's all I've heard out of you.
No, ma'am.
Let's have something off the top of your head, not somebody else's.
Oh, no, I'm giving you stuff off the top of my head because I've done the research, but I'm just asking you, what has he done, May? What has he done as a president that you think that is so great that he needs another 4 years? Name me one specific.
Go ahead, Mace.
What I get done. And I hope he make a second time so he can run your own loony. Because I'm getting a joy out of it. I love it.
Oh, I'm not upset, May. I just asked you why.
Yes, you are.
I ain't asking you about. Do you want me to be upset? Do you want me to be upset? Because you seem to think I am and you're getting off on that. What
you
I'm asking
George
you,
Bush,
May,
what
I'm not
did you
asking
get out of
but,
it?
No, I didn't. I didn't ask you about me. I didn't ask you about what I'm doing. I asked you. See, you keep sidestepping my question because you can't answer the question. I'll answer it for you. Here's what May's actually saying. He's done nothing. I'm just voting for him because he's a liberal.
No. It's not as simple as all that. I'll say it. She's just voting for him because he's black. And
I concur. I agree.
She's not voting for him because he's a liberal, because Mays has indicated numerous times that she's neither liberal nor Republican. She doesn't wear any labels. So Mays is black as coal, and so she.
Oh.
I could say this. I could say. And she voted for Barack Obama simply because he's black. Are you black as Ace of Spades? You
no,
aren't
I'm
you,
not
Mays?
Black. I'm colored.
Oh, come on.
I came out of the colored era, and y'all having a fit because he is black. Your sidekick on the side.
Oh,
that's his problem because he is black,
that's
and that's why he's running you crazy.
No, Mays, because here's the thing. If Colin Powell had run for president, I might have voted for him, not because he's black, but because he was or seemed to be at that time to be a Republican. But now that Barack Obama's come into office, he's leaning more toward independent or liberal. So I would have made a mistake in voting for Colin Powell, not because of his skin color, but because at that time, when folks were trying to draft him to run for president, he appeared to be a Republican. But as it stands now, Colin Powell is a rhino. So, you know, it's not about being, for me, it's not about the skin color, because Barack Obama could care less what's going on in the black community, given the massive amount of unemployment in around, you know, around the country, period, but certainly almost double in the black community. So
20% in the black community.
Yeah, so
in the black community.
That's another.
So being black maze doesn't seem to be helping anybody.
Hey, George
except
Bush.
Barack Obama.
But you know what's funny, Robert? You say that what May doesn't understand that the unemployment rate wasn't that high when George Bush was president, especially not in the black community. The unemployment rate was not 20%. It wasn't. Under Barack Obama, black people are a lot less fortunate and worse off under this president than any other president in about the last 20 years.
Well, that's exactly right, Lee. And I did a show on that subject just
like
a couple of days
ago. I'm not having no problem.
Under Carter, the unemployment rate was at 14%. Under Reagan, it went down to 11. Under Clinton. The next George Bush, it maintained steady at around 11%, 10.4, and then up to 11. And then all of a sudden, it maintains the unemployment rate for blacks maintains an even keel at around anywhere from 9 to 11%. And then under Obama's watch, we're at 17.2 officially, and even more unofficially.
Probably higher than that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it's because the jobs the black folks had, I mean, they were done away with. I mean, look at the economy.
That's exactly right.
And, no, the jobs the black people had, if the black people create their own job, they wouldn't have to worry about nobody else's job.
All right.
Hey, thanks, Robert, for letting me come on, bro.
Hey, you're welcome, man. I got to wrap it up.
Yeah,
all right.
That's right, run.
Don't you go anywhere, man.
All right, run. That's what you're doing. You know I don't know nothing. Come on, God bless you, please.
You need all the blessings you can get.
Okay, that's why you take it that way. The devil going to ask God to bless somebody.
Yeah.
Did I
play that clip for you, Maze, about the black folks saying that Obama, you know, really hadn't done anything for the black community?
Of course, I'm going to white one say that Bush didn't do nothing for them either, so what did they got to do with anything? Nothing.
Well, okay. All right. You know what?
Something to me. That don't bother me. You see, they have a memo. All of that stuff that you say, I hear it on every conservative station. It's just like a memo that has been passed out. Yeah, I tell you, y'all not gonna upset us.
Us? Who is us, Maze?
The black people that try to upset with that rhetoric.
The rhetoric of the tongue there.
The black people 17% unemployed. The black people have lost. I'm saying like, okay, this little scenario don't go together, because if the blacks are moving back south and buying homes, and then they don't have capital or anything anymore, but they're retiring and moving back south. And so whoever came out with that certificate need to take it and put it back and give the money back that they made from it.
All right, we were talking about the petulant president, and that was what tonight's episode was really all about.
It's always about the president.
President Barack Obama. No, not always.
Y'all mad, and he's running y'all crazy.
No.
And when Colin Powell was trying to run for president, the same.
We did conspiracy theories for 2 days straight last week, and very little of it had anything to do with President Obama. We were talking about the unpetulant, unpresidential president, but now it seems like you've overshadowed him, Maze. You're the petulant Maze. You're showing us what petulant really means, because you've been petulant this whole call.
Really, I'm just showing you what an American is.
Oh, is that what?
They don't,
is
have
that
to have, they don't use a party, because I don't wear parties. I told you I'm an American.
All right.
And by being American, I have the freedom to speak.
Yes, you do.
That's why I can listen to a conservative, I can listen to a liberal, I can listen to these fake people, and all of them cut out of the same page.
All right. Oh, hold on, Maze. I got to play this clip, and then we'll wrap it up, okay?
That's why they can live together.
Yeah.
Talking, not him.
The thieves, no matter how they're dressed, the
feel at peace.
Obama is a brainwash, just like Hitler was.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There are so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Rourke from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
All right. Hey, listen, next week we're going to be talking about Ayn Rand's book, The Fountainhead, and I Am John Galt, and an Atlas Shrugged. The new book is that's out is a an offshoot of Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. It's called I Am John Galt, and we're all going to be John Galts. Who is John Galt? I Am John Galt. We're going to be talking about that next week, the new book. For those of you who are not familiar with Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, it was originally titled The Strike. And the book is about businesses, corporations, companies that are being overregulated and overtaxed to the extent that they decide business leaders en masse are going to go on strike, which means they will cease to produce. This effect brings about, well, this brings about the effect of the country and indeed the globe coming to a standstill financially. When businesses and companies, corporations decide that they will no longer put up with being overtaxed and overregulated and pretty much stolen from by the government, they decide that they're going to act. And that's really what Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, is all about. And we see that happening here this very day. I want to thank everybody for listening, everybody for coming in the chat room, all my favorite people. Beach Bum is in the house, Southern Sense, Tesla, GGT, Richard, glad to see you. Patriot Greg, Gunslinger, my main man, CFGA. Craig, East Coast, Bobo King, new in the house. I tell you what, Lee, Lee, who is CFGA, made a surprise visit. I'm glad he did. And, of course, my girl, Maze. Maze, I love you, girl. Crazy as Lou, but I love you. Thank you for coming in. Have a great night. And we'll see everybody tomorrow night. Please come back. We're going to talk more about some really good stuff coming up. Thank y'all for listening. Have a great night.